Welcome back. And Dr. Jazz. And so we're talking to is Dr. Jazz himself, Ellis Marsalis Jr. Welcome. Good to have you on this program, Mr. Marsalis. It's just an honor to have you with us.
You're quite welcome. Pleasure.
And I had to make the distinction of Jr. because your namesake, the third, has been on the show many times. So
I've thought about that. You know, coming from Baltimore.
Right. Yeah. He's an amazing young mind. So it's always good to have him on the air with us. Well, welcome. It's good to have you here with us. There's so much to begin here. You're coming to Baltimore though for the gala at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. Are you going to be playing there Saturday night as well?
Ellis asked me if I would come and participate and benefit for the museum. And I said, sure, I'd be glad to do that. And so I'll be playing piano. I'm not bringing a group.
Uh-huh.
It'll just be myself and playing for the benefit.
Well, let me go back a bit. I mean, you have, it's almost your birthday, right? Coming up.
Actually, it is.
Right.
It's on my birthday.
Actually, you're going to be here on your birthday.
Right.
Wow. That's amazing. You'll be 81 years young.
Yeah.
Still cooking.
That's one way to look at it.
The older I get, I have to look at it like that. I try anyway. I think just for interest's sake, to kind of go back to your own growing up. I'm growing up in New Orleans as a young man in the 30s and 40s, in that world of music with your parents who were also social activists. Talk about, I'm just reflecting a bit on what that New Orleans was and where we are now.
The New Orleans then and now?
Yeah.
Well, New Orleans is a difficult place to describe. Especially to people who have not been here, even people who come here as tourists, the essence of New Orleans is not really grasped that easily. I was born from a political standpoint of view. I was born in the era of racial segregation.
Right.
So, you know, we were sitting behind the screens on the bus and, you know, just drinking water fountains, white and colored and all of that. but in a lot of ways, I feel blessed to having been born in New Orleans because of the nature of my talent.
Mm-hmm.
Which is music. So New Orleans is a great town in which to be born if you're really involved with music. So as soon as I could, what I mean is when I got in high school and got old enough to start venturing away from the nest, I discovered all kinds of musicians that I had not known up to that young point that was playing in various clubs and various bands for dances and what have you. So it wasn't too long after that. At the time, I was about 13. It wasn't too long after that I sort of melded into the workforce, if you will, even though I was not playing music for a living. I was still in school.
Mm-hmm.
But I began to develop skills that was necessary to function in the popular music arena that was in New Orleans. And when I say that, what I mean is I was playing tenor saxophone when I was in high school. My first instrument was a clarinet, but by the time I came along, the clarinet was pretty much relegated to the traditional jazz.
Right.
See, so the tenor saxophone became the instrument of choice for the solos by the rhythm and blues artists. You know, people like Roy Brown, Fats Domino, Earl King. You know, that instrument was favored. So I got a tenor saxophone and started learning a lot of these different tenor saxophone solos, and would eventually get calls to play. I was sort of the youngest of the bunch that was out here. So everybody else who was like a seasoned veteran got the first call. And when they'd run out, you know, they'd call me, which I didn't mind because at the time I wasn't really sure that that's how it went.
Right, right.
You know, but eventually I started to realize that I had a penchant for jazz music, which was not that easy to find, but it was easy enough, so to speak, that I was able to start listening to people like Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, and the various individuals who were influenced by them, Sonny Stitt, Sonny Rollins, so forth and so on. And as is usually the case, whatever it is that you do, you are either attracted to others who do the same thing, or you attract others to you who are interested in the same thing.
Right.
And by the time I got out of high school, I had gained an acquaintance with Harold Batiste, who just recently passed away. And that's when I started getting more mentorship, so to speak, from Harold. Harold was about 3 years older than I was. He was a student at Dillard University.
You went to Dillard as well, right?
Huh?
You went to Dillard, too.
Yeah, he was ahead of me by maybe 2 years, I think, 2 or 3 years. So when I started as a freshman in 1951. And he was already there. And so he would take time to show me things like how to read chord symbols and work on chords on a piano. And different kinds of things. He was already in the workforce. But that's pretty much how I grew up.
And you ended up being a teacher. I mean, a big part of your life was as a teacher. I mean, you taught, or as you like to say, I've written a piece about you where you thought of yourself as a coach more than a teacher. But when your days were teaching the CCA and running the jazz department at the University of New Orleans, you taught like Donald Harrison and Nicholas Payton and Harry Connick Jr. and some of the greats. I mean, they studied under you. I mean, that was part of what your legacy is, what you left behind through your sons is also through these other men and women who you taught.
Well, that's a wide span of time.
Yes, yes, it really is. Right.
Oh, excuse me.
That's all right. You all right?
When I say that, what I mean is this. I graduated from Dillard in 1955, and teaching school was the furthest from my mind. I mean, I just was not interested in that. They conducted interviews on the campus at Dillard. And one of the teachers, the superintendent of the school and a principal, would come out and interview students who had been education majors. And those who they were accepted in August of that same year to get a letter saying report to XYZ school. And that was the beginning of your teaching career. Well, my interview lasted about 2 minutes. I looked at them, they looked at me, and I was out the door. I wasn't interested in teaching, and I didn't want to, I wasn't interested in playing a game with nothing. So anyway, I did eventually begin to teach out of necessity, because by, well, I went in the military for a couple of years, and when I got out, I got married, and the decisions of, well, okay, now I got to have some kind of job here, you know, got to, family is on the way. So the teaching aspect was something that I had a certification in.
Mm-hmm.
And the first job I had, it was in a kind of a semi-rural area, which is where I used to live in Shrewsbury, adjoining parish. I spent a year there, and the principal assigned me to all kinds of classes, like biology and other stuff, you know. And the last period of the day, he said that's when you'd be to develop your develop band. Now, there was no instruments, there was no designated band room, there was none of that. So, after a year, I said, sayonara, you know, like, I'm out of here. I mean, in other words, if I can't help these kids, then I sure ain't gonna hang around and hurt them.
Right.
Well, so, a friend of mine was teaching in another parish, in St. Martin Parish, which is further up about 150 miles from New Orleans. He had a band. He was a good band teacher, too. And he took another job as a band director. And this is in a little town called Brobridge. And he took a job in another town called Opelousas, which is maybe 40, 50 miles from Brobridge. So I went and talked to the superintendent about that. He hired me to become a band teacher, choral teacher, and public school music, they called it, which is teaching kids 1 through 6. Some, you know, I was supposed to help the teachers with music for their particular class. And this was all elementary school. Well, it didn't take long to find out. The teachers would bring their kids in and dump them in the class and say, look, I don't know nothing about music, and walk out the door. So I had to figure out what I was going to do, you know, with these kids 1 through 6. You know, and depending on when it was, I, you know, would teach little patriotic song, which is one of the best things to do when you're dealing with young kids. But I stayed there for 2 years, I think it was, and left. And when I came back to New Orleans, that would have been, around 64, 65, something like that.
Right. Uh-huh.
And by then, LBJ had ushered in the Civil Rights Bill in 64 and the Voters' Rights Bill in 65. So there was no more, you know, sitting behind the screen and, you know, white and colored water fountains and what have you.
So let me ask you this.
So when I came back, I was able to get some jobs that I would not have been able to get even before. So I started to do what I call gig hustling, which means a more proper term is freelancing. And, you know, I get jobs here and there and what have you. So that went on for a couple of years. And until in, let's see, what was it, 1967, I think. I was doing, well, a little earlier. No, I was right about that time, about 1967. I was asked to teach a course in African-American music at Xavier University. And the chairman of the music department, he told me, he said, look, if you get a master's degree, I'll put you on at the university full time.
And you did.
And I said, well, you know, I can't beat that with a stick. But see, by then we had like four kids, you know, by that time. And so I started there. And
so,
let's see, when was that?
So let me ask this question.
Not long after that, I joined Al Hirst Band. And it was the first real professional organization, music group, that I had been in that wasn't like a hustle. You know, it was real, it was organized, and this guy had at least three hit songs, and he built his career off of that. So I was a piano player until 70. Yeah, that's when it was, till 1970.
So,
and but I was still teaching at Xavier because Al was not a person that really loved the road. So he was from New Orleans, had a club in New Orleans, and liked to stay at home. So I was able to be home a lot, and it didn't really interfere with teaching at Xavier. It was, even though Xavier teaching was part-time.
So, you know, Mr. Marcellus, we're almost out of time in this segment, but I do very, you know, I there's so much that you have to teach us about the connections of New Orleans to our history and to who we are as a people, and how music and culture fits into that. And we wouldn't be America without New Orleans, without Louisiana. I mean, it gave so much to this country for so many complex ways. And and I would really hope that that one time we can sit down together and kind of do this long history together, because I think you have a great deal to show us all about our country and who we are through the work you've done over the years. And I just want to thank you for all that. I think that you're just a remarkable human being, and I'm glad we can have this short time together. I hope that one day, as your son Ellis III would like to do, for a much longer conversation, to really sit down and get your history down on tape, because you have so much to offer us.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, it's ironic that you would say that. I was talking to a friend of mine who was maybe about 2 or 3 years younger than I was. We were sitting at the table together as guests of the mayor. He had awards that he was giving, the city awards he was giving to different people. And we were sitting at the table together. And I told him, I said, man, I said, have you, anybody started working on your biography? You know, he says, no. I said, well, you know, I said, you should probably consider that, because if you don't, when you pass away,
it's gone.
People will write anything and everything. You know, and
it's true.
It won't necessarily be true.
So, Ms. Marceau, we have to go here, but I look forward to seeing what you're going to be playing Saturday night. We're going to go out with your song, Friendships. Ellis Marsalis Jr. will be, performing at the 10th anniversary of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum at their gala. You can get more information at lewismuseum.org about the 10th anniversary gala. And it's just been an honor. I hope this will be only the first time, and doing numerous times, we'll have Mr. Ellis Marsalis Jr. on with us to hear about our history and who he is and what he has to offer. Thank you so much for what you've given all of us, and I look forward to meeting you in Baltimore.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And thank you all for joining us here today. We'll go out with Friendships. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Calvin Perry, and Monifa Wilson, who is working with us today. Our theme music is by Juan Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA. 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.